You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg alongside Spike Friedman. Today's episode is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to get up to a 50% bonus on your first deposit. Spike, we're into, I don't know which week of Seahawkless football.
We're just wandering through the morass at this point.
Right, yeah. We're kind of just nomads at this point, looking for any kind of football to watch, even though it's probably a terrible sport to cheer on and root for. But, but we watch it nonetheless. There's other sports, but we keep coming back to this one.
Yeah.
But some things happened pertaining to the Seahawks. Not particularly huge things. We already covered the hirings they made. We'll touch on that a little later in the show. I guess right off the bat, we got some news as far as players making some teams, I guess. That's the best way to put it.
Yep. Yeah, the PFWA, I believe that's Pro Football Writers of America, announced their all-pro and all-rookie teams.
Right.
And there were good news for Seahawks fans.
And right.
And
yeah.
Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas were both all-pros, and then Ethan Posick was all-rookie.
Yeah, the most high-profile Seahawk, I guess, on the list, Ethan Posick. Yeah.
It is good to see Earl get his due after getting denied an All-Pro bid from right. the NFL, which was dumb.
His case for comeback player of the year, though, should be pretty strong. I don't know who else they'd give it to. I haven't really paid attention to that kind of storyline except for Earl. But yeah, he deserves it. Bobby deserves it. And Posick was fine. And if you're fine as a rookie, that means you're doing pretty good for your. I guess, experience level, I should say. Another name that was left off, but it's really just due to circumstances and the skill at the position. Shaq Griffin was left off the all-rookie team due to Marshawn Lattimore and Tre'Davious White being in the league and being as amazing as they are.
It wasn't close for Griffin. I mean, to have two guys go in the first round and then both be Pro Bowl caliber players from the first week of the year, it's pretty incredible.
Right.
It's good that the Seahawks, you know, they waited as long as possible in the draft while still grabbing a very high caliber cornerback. I think that Griffin pick is going to go down. I don't want to say it as a Sherman level great pick, but I mean somewhere in the range between Walter Thurman and Cam Chancellor, it's sort of where that Griffin pick is going to land in the Seahawks run of great defensive picks. So that's great. But, you know, some years the draft is super deep in a single position. And last year it was cornerback. And boy, howdy, was that shown. I mean, Griffin would probably be one of the top 15, 20 rookies in the league, but he's not even close to top two at his position. He might even be four or five.
Exactly, and you got other talented young cornerbacks like Witherspoon and San Francisco. That's just coming off the top of my head in the division. But yeah,
he was better than Adoree Jackson was in Tennessee, but he was also better coached than Adoree.
Exactly. I'd say that it's hard to compare Griffin right now in his rookie year, but you're already getting positive returns on that pick, and it's hard to place him with a name, but you're already getting a positive contributor to that secondary. So, you know, this pick seems like a home run pick, and we should be happy to have Shaq Griffin. I think that he's going to be a very, very good football player, and we'll cheer for him for a long time.
Yeah. Also, before we move on from this, just because there's not much going on, so I get a spiel off on Ethan Posick. I forget who it was on Twitter, but someone who's either an into the know or a fake in the know, someone was saying that Ethan Posick is very, very highly regarded right now by the front office. They love what he did as a rookie, and that he, along with he's second only to Dwayne Brown in terms of who they are going to build around, with Solari coming in as the new offensive line coach. And I think that's great. I mean, what you saw from Posick were good skills and instincts, but sort of an insufficient anchor, which is not the Tom Cable way of going about things. For him, he wanted guys who were physically beasting, but then, you know, he'd give them the technique, and that never seemed to happen. But with Posick, you've got a guy where it's like, man, if he has a great offseason in the weight room, and apparently that knee injury he suffered week 17 was pretty minor, so he'll be able to have a full offseason weight program, he's going to be a really good player. I think he's going to be a really nice interior lineman. You know, and that's what this team needs. They needed a draft like the one they just had, where two of their first three picks are going to turn into consistently very good players, probably. Right. It's very weird that Malik McDowell is unlikely to be one of them. But the fact is, if you hit on your next two, you know, that's a good draft. And so I'm feeling, you know, I just want to put some positive vibes out into the world.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Posick coming into the draft and going into the offseason when he was a rookie was his versatility. And we saw that because he's more of a center than any position, but he could play multiple positions. We saw him at right guard. He was an upgrade over Odeo Bushi. And yeah, it showed what kind of caliber player he can be, you know, given that it's probably not his natural position, but he was able to get plugged in and play, and especially under Tom Cable. So, you know, we'll see how he is under this Solari-powered offensive line, and we'll take things from there.
But... And the path of least resistance in terms of the line next year is to have Brown at left tackle, Posick at left guard, Britt, and then Effetti at right guard, and then either Fant or a new player at right tackle, or a new player replacing Effetti at right guard. So that, and that would take Effetti out of a position where he was clearly outmatched, let's say.
Yeah.
let's go with outmatched.
Struggling?
Couldn't hold his own without holding his others or something. Because he committed a lot of penalties, guys. Too many penalties. Oh, boy.
Yeah, Ethan Posick, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I think we said enough about it.
All right, well,
Ethan Posick getting a very minor award.
Yeah, we'll stop thinking about the offensive line for a second. We'll talk to you guys about mybookie.ag.
Because
there's two games this weekend. There's two games. We're going to pick them.
Yeah, we got it.
All right, so there's obviously the Jacksonville Jaguars versus the New England Patriots and the Minnesota Vikings versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Different lines for each game. Different over-unders.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. So a funny thing about the Jacksonville Jaguars and New England Patriots line, the Patriots were originally favored by 9 points, but then Tom Brady jammed his finger on his throwing hand, which was worth 1.5 points for Jacksonville. So the line's currently at 7.5 points for that game. New England's favored.
Yeah, so here, I'm like a bunch of minds about this game, but I just want to read off something. Hold on. Let's see. Okay, so here are the number of points the Jaguars have given up over the last 2 weeks. 24 to the Seahawks, 7 to the Texans, 44 to the 49ers, 15 to the Titans, 3 to the Bills, 42 to the Steelers. What that tells me is this vaunted Jaguars defense isn't maybe quite as good as it was early in the year. I mean, those are some big point totals to give up. 44 to Garoppolo, 42 to Roethlisberger, 24 to Russell Wilson on a day where he wasn't really doing much. You know, I worry that if Tom Brady's finger is operational, if it's functional, if it's not broken, if it's just bruised, if he can put a glove on it and be fine, that the Patriots are going to be able to put some points up. And the flip on that is that the Patriots, though, whenever they lose a playoff game, it's that the front four of the opposition is able to get pressure. And we know with the Jaguars, with Yannick Ngakoue and Calais Campbell and Malik Jackson. Yeah. That they can get pressure with their front four. They can. So both teams are sort of like, you look at that Patriots offense and you go, oh boy, they're going to put up some points against anybody. And Jaguars defense has really done a good job against bad offenses, but good offenses have been able to find their holes and get some points. But at the same time, we know that the Patriots' Achilles heel is something that the Jaguars can exploit. They got Miles Jack to put on Gronkowski. Like, what do you... Oh, man. And then you look at the other side of the ball, and every other week, Blake Bortles is great. He's putting up 45. He's putting up 33. He's putting up 30. He's putting up 45. And then he's putting up 10. And then he's putting up 10 again. Like, I don't know, man.
Brant. I'm going to take New England to cover, and I'm going to take the over.
Wow. All right. So they're covering with the over. So the over-under is 46.5. So you're seeing something in the way of like a 33-17 situation?
Kind of like that, yeah. I mean, Jacksonville's going to – it's going to be a close game probably through three quarters. They're going to struggle with some pressure. But at the end of the game, we're going to be asking, how many fingers could Tom Brady beat the Jaguars with?
Yeah.
I'm going with about eight. He could be missing two and then still beat the Jaguars.
This game is just so high variance because part of me is like, man, take the under. Why not? This game could easily be like 19-10 Patriots, but it could also be like 48-45.
Yeah, I just think that I think that New England's just going to pull away at some point late in the game, and Blake Bortles isn't going to do enough when the game is on his shoulders to win the game.
I'm going to go weird. I'm going to go Patriots covering, but I'm going to go with the under.
All right, so we get a little variance with this, so it's not bad. All right, now the next game is obviously Vikings and Eagles. And it's weird because the Vikings are the underdogs going into Philadelphia. They're a dome team going into Philly in January.
No, they're the favorites.
Oh yeah, they're the favorites. My bad, they're the favorites.
Yeah, they're 3 point
they're favored
favorites.
By 3 points. Yes. They're going into Philly in January, being a dome team. Now, however, they have played outdoors, I think, is the past two seasons before this season?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the thing, the tradition is, like, the team coming into the cold, obviously, after being in a dome, struggles, but we see this Vikings team, and that defense, it seems like it can travel, and I just don't trust Nick Foles to beat the Vikings defense.
Yeah, this game's got a little bit of Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man in it, in that... And that you're dealing with second choice quarterbacks, you're dealing with weird running back committees, you're dealing with really great defenses, and you're looking at an outdoor game in Philly late at night.
Yeah.
So man, again, I hate betting on Nick Foles, and I need more than 3 points. Like, if this line were 4.5, because I think this is going to be a close game.
Yeah, me too.
I need like 4.5 to take the Eagles. Three, man, and especially after being like, after getting beat up with the last second cover with the Saints last week. I gotta go Vikings. Case Keenum has just been like pretty good this year.
Yeah, no. One thing about Case Keenum is that, you know, with all the jokes and the slander and how bad he played through his first years in the league, you know, he's a really hard worker. And as much credit that goes to the coaching staff, credit should also go to Keenum for working as hard as he did and playing as well as he has. I will go with the Vikings, and I think I'm going to take the under on this game.
Yeah, I'm just like. You know, the Eagles' secondary isn't great, and their pass rush hasn't been totally dominant. And I just am like, I kind of like the idea that Diggs and Thielen are going to be able to get enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The Vikings are going to get to 24, 21, 24, and I don't know that the Eagles can get to 24 against that Minnesota defense. I mean, Drew Brees could barely get there.
And you know what? I think probably that's a strong point. The receiving group of the Vikings is a strong point, and not that the Eagles' secondary is super weak, but it's definitely not the strongest point of their defense. And I think that, like you said, they'll be able to get enough to put enough points on the board to get near the end zone so they can run it in or, you know, throw it up to Adam Thielen, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I just see the Vikings being able to drive down. You know, I do... I will say in a game this close, I believe the Eagles have the better special teams. I'm going to look that up as I talk pretty slowly just to make sure that I'm right. I don't want to be wrong about this sort of thing. That would be humiliating for me. So I'm going to keep talking, And
this is the Lockdown Filibuster podcast.
Right! Yeah, but only barely. The Eagles are only a barely better special teams. Last year, the Eagles were second in special teams DVOA. This year, they're middle of the pack. Vikings are just below that. But the Vikings' kicking game is well below average.
Yeah.
And the Eagles' kicking game is right around average.
See, the thing is, like, it's not on mybookie.ag, like we're talking about, but like the Vikings have had terrible luck with kicking field goals, especially in playoff games. And they're going to Philadelphia in the nighttime. And this could be a scenario where Kai Forbath has to line up and take maybe a 45-yarder to win the game in the nighttime, in the middle of January in Philadelphia. And, you know, Vikings fans probably have a little bit of PTSD hearing that. I don't know how many Vikings fans listen to this podcast, but if they are, they're probably shaking in their boots thinking about it.
Yeah, I that could be a big part of it. So yeah, I still like the Vikings. I mean, their defense is so good. Like, people talk about the Jaguars being the team that is like the Seahawks, but like that Vikings team too. I mean, that is a razor thin margin to me between the two best defenses left. And the Eagles aren't slouches. Man, I feel like all year I haven't believed in the Eagles, and yet here they are in the NFC title game. For me, though, I still think the Vikings and the Saints were the two best NFC playoff teams. They played a classic last week. It felt like the winner of that was going to go to the Super Bowl. I'm not going to back off that read. I'm going to stick with it. So, all right, there we go.
We're going to see a Tom Brady, Case Keenum Super Bowl. That's what we're getting for our official mybookie.ag picks.
No. I ain't picking that. Oh. You know what I'm picking? Case Keenum's going to be there. But Brian Hoyer is going to be there when Tom Brady aggravates that finger injury later.
No.
Yeah, baby. Man. Hoyer v. Keenum.
This was the biggest plot twist in Locked On Seahawks history.
So glad I landed that. Honestly, I had to double check to make sure it was Brian Hoyer and not Steny Hoyer or whatever Hoyer.
It was a Gary Payton to Sean Kemp lob and alley-oop.
Good stuff.
Perfect. All right, we'll get right back to you with the rest of this show because we took way too long on these MyBookie picks. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're with Grant Goldberg, at Grant Goldberg on Twitter, and you're with Spike Friedman, also at Spike Friedman on Twitter. You can find the show's Twitter, at Lock Seahawks, and you can find Spike's writing at The Stranger. I think he just wrote a piece today, right, Spike?
Yeah, I wrote a piece on Seattle's bid for the World Cup that actually has some Seahawks-related implications, in that Seahawks put in a really good new turf last year, and it's going to be a very interesting question if Seattle is made a host city for the World Cup in 2026, if North America is given it, whether the Seattle will be asked to put in a grass surface in a major stadium. If so, what the cost of that will be, how that will go down. I am strongly of the opinion that unless something significant changes, they shouldn't, and that Seattle should get a World Cup bid. And a lot of it has to do with, like, for real, the Women's World Cup, it was a big scandal where they made all of the women's matches be played on artificial turf. But that had to do with, but it was because it would have cost a ton of money to put grass fields into Canadian stadiums that would not have been able to afford to maintain them. So they would have had to just rip them right out after. And it's a similar thing in Seattle where NFL football and motocross and all the stuff that happens at CenturyLink Field, given the drainage issues related to the stadium, you put grass in there and it will not last. It will cost a ton to maintain. You're going to have to replace it at least once a year. It'll be in worse shape than the Santa Clara field. So you don't want that, Seattle still has otherwise perfect facilities and a great soccer fandom, so that should not stand in the way of them getting a bid. So I have like a weird, it's like a weird, like, quasi-feminist argument where it's like, you made the women do this, the men should have to do it too. I don't know, but I genuinely believe that. So right. Anyway,
you know what? That has legs. And you know, speaking of soccer, the Seahawks are going to be across the pond next season. They're going to Tottenham Stadium, their new stadium, and they're going to play the Oakland Raiders. Now, I think relating to the issue that were at hand with the turf and the World Cup bid, you know, if Seattle had a retractable pitch like the new Tottenham Stadium it wouldn't be that much of an issue. But they don't. And by 2026, who knows? But anyways, we'll get back to the subject at hand. We're not gonna go to London, but the Seahawks are.
And yeah, we might. You never know.
We could start a GoFundMe. There's better things for GoFundMe, for you to spend money on. But we could potentially start a GoFundMe to cover the game from London. Spike, how do you feel about the Seahawks playing overseas next year?
I'm pretty psyched about the specifics of it. Obviously, you're a little nervous. It is a long, long way to travel for Seattle for a football game. But the specifics are they're playing another West Coast team. Oakland, I believe, actually technically has to travel further because of the flight paths. They're playing at 6 p.m. London time, which is a 10 a.m. start time here. So even though that's early, it still isn't crazy early. It isn't like a 6 a.m. start time for the West Coast, which is what a lot of those London games are. And it's the same issues for Oakland. I like that it's Oakland. I feel like those are two teams that now have global fan bases, so it won't just be one of those matches where it's like, you know, a bunch of random British dudes in like Jags jerseys there, even though the Jags aren't the team that are playing. I think it's going to be a pretty good way to open up that new stadium in London for the NFL. I think it's going to be a really cool matchup, and I don't think the Seahawks are at a competitive disadvantage. And it's pretty tough to create the situation for them to go to London and not be at a competitive disadvantage. So credit to the NFL for making it a fair fight.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, like being on the internet and being a Seahawks fan, especially in this day and age, I've seen a lot of support of the Seahawks coming from London and coming from England and Europe in that case. And so there should be a good turnout. I mean, obviously the Seahawks fans are known to travel well. I don't know how many are going to show up all the way in London, but you know, we should see a good turnout. I think that it's something very exciting. People can make a trip out of it and really just enjoy themselves. I think that it's going to be cool playing in the new Tottenham Stadium with a retractable pitch and, you know, a state-of-the-art, world-class, brand-new
stadium. You
keep
saying retractable pitch. Do you mean retractable roof?
No, retractable pitch. They can retract they can put a football field
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's like the Arizona Stadium.
Yeah, yeah. They can.
That's great.
They have the cool. They have the football field under where the soccer field will be, where the pitch will be. And so they have slabs of the turf or the grass that they take in and out. And so they don't have to worry about it getting messed up with the football games.
Amazing. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, I think it's the only stadium.
Unlike you, I am not a Spurs fan, so the idea of their field getting messed up is hilarious to me.
Yeah. But I mean, it'll be nice to have a team that's won something in the past few years to play in there. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. It's a 10 a.m. start. I know people like whine and complain about that, but we're coming off a year where the Seahawks had no 10 a.m. starts and had their worst year in 6 years. So
yeah, I think Bob can tote him.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to credit Bob right there. But yeah, so who cares? It's a London game. It should be fun. They're not playing at 6 in the morning like some teams are. So be happy about that.
Yep, I agree. I think it's fun.
Yeah, I don't think that there's much to talk about except that we were right about Pete Carroll really running the defense, because KJ Wright came out and really basically said the same thing.
For those of you who listened to us talking about Ken Norton's hire earlier this week, we were basically like, it isn't, no matter what, it's going to be that Pete Carroll philosophy, and it's about the leadership of the defensive coordinator. KJ Wright was like, yeah, it's a Pete Carroll defense, because KJ Wright is great, and he's always right. You know what I mean?
Right. All right. We'll take a break, and we'll get back to you right now.
Oh, boy.
We are back with the end of the Locked On Seahawks podcast for today. Spike Friedman is joining Grant Goldberg. the voice that you're hearing right now. It's been a weird show, kind of, because we're just sifting through what's remaining in Seahawks news of the week. Something fresh, Bob Condotta put it on Twitter. He quoted the original source that I'm forgetting, but Daryl Bevel's interviewing for the vacant Falcons QB coach job. It's really hard to see an ex that you just parted ways with already find something new, but I think the Seahawks will.
Bevel
to be here, but like, spread your wings, Daryl.
It's a weird one. It's weird to see Cable get hired by a team that was like that fired him in the past because of his history of abuse. That was weird.
Yeah.
And we'll get that revenge game in London, which I love. But the Bevel thing, I'm like, man, I wish we'd still had Daryl Bevel instead of Brian Schottenheimer. But that said, God, as much as like there's sort of a mini rivalry right now between Seattle and Atlanta, watching Atlanta just like not quite put it together this year with all that offensive talent and being like, yeah, I feel like if they brought Daryl Bevel in, they might be a little more effective. I don't know. He doesn't feel like the right guy for them either, so I don't know.
Yeah,
man, I miss him, but I don't respect him at the same time.
Right, it's like, you know, I would have rather had what we had before, but like this new thing, we don't know how it's going to work out, so we're going to test the waters with it. I don't know. The Seahawks announced it officially that they hired Brian Schottenheimer, Ken Norton, Mike Solari. And these hires really, really speak to what I think is going to be a recommitting to the running game for Seattle. I know Pete Carroll wants to run the football. Brian Schottenheimer will listen to anybody who tells him to run the football. And Mike Solari likes to run the ball as well. And so I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more of that in Seattle. It's going to depend on the draft class that we have and the health of the running back group going forward. But if it's anything like 2017, I don't think that they should commit to the run very much.
Yeah, I agree. But hopefully, I'll say this. I've been watching some Mike Solari. I've been learning more about Mike Solari. I like him. He, of the new hires, is my favorite.
So. It's a low bar.
Yep, it is. But yeah, well, the guy he's replacing was my least favorite, and he has the best track record of the guys coming in. So, you know, it's sort of a win-win there. If we had only done that, I would be happier. But hey, what do you
think? Mike Solari's batting 100 with us right now, or 1,000.
yeah.
All right, I think that's done. I think we're done for today. I think we'll get back to you guys on Monday. Maybe there'll be some more Seahawks news, but there'll definitely be a Super Bowl matchup that we'll be talking about come Monday. So go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review if you enjoyed this podcast. If you didn't, then you can talk to us on Twitter about it, but don't leave it in a review. Leave your Twitter handle in the review, and you'll be entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. You can get access to a lot of numbers. You can see what you like.
And you can bet on mybookie.ag using the promo code LOCKEDON and get 50% bonus betting, baby!
All right, Spike beat me to the punch on that one. Yeah, if you're not on mybookie, you can play drafts, daily fantasy sports. You can do a draft in like 3 minutes. It's super fast, super cheap. You can use the promo code LONFL for a free draft on your first visit. So I don't think there's many NFL games, so you can't really pick NFL players, but there are NBA drafts that you can definitely take advantage of. So go ahead and do that, and go ahead and just listen to the rest of our shows for this offseason. We're going to be putting out shows all the time.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, I think that does it for Locked On Seahawks. I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.